So the topic is about building Vaishnava relationships, if I'm right, huh? That's what it was, building. A Vaishnava is never an ordinary person, and therefore the beginning of any Vaishnava relationship is to somehow or other keep that as a focus, as a meditation, and to appreciate that more, how a Vaishnava is actually a special person, and that every Vaishnava is a special person. Even a Vaishnava who is still conditioned by the modes of material nature and may have some contamination from the material nature must still be considered like a very special, saintly person. So without thoroughly attempting to realize that mood, there is no question of Vaishnava relationships. Because in the material world, people are at least considering themselves equal, and that's at least, everyone is equal. And that is the modern official philosophy. Any democracy, after all, everyone has one vote. It doesn't matter who you are. Everyone has the same vote. And nobody gets any more. And democracy is sort of the modern ideal, being imposed upon the world. And so-called backward places have not yet implemented it, but we will throw bombs on them until they will. And we will force them to elect their own government. So in this way, we're seeing relationships in modern times at least start on a concept that everyone is equal. In Vaishnava relationships, it's never like that. We are not considering. We are considering everyone is my superior. I am rather the inferior person. I am somehow or other in the lower position. Still, the situation can become complex, because although we may consider ourselves in the lower position, at the same time, in terms of responsibility, we may wind up in the senior position. So then, what to do? We see that even those devotees who are in the senior position still consider themselves in the lower position. And that they are fulfilling the role in the senior position as this is formality. For formality's sake, we are observing a certain etiquette, but actually all the external respect due to that is now given to me due to the position I have, I'm not worthy of it actually. I'm just accepting it for formality's sake. And that actually is the attitude of the Vaishnava. Because as soon as we start to identify with our position, and as soon as we think that I am in a position of seniority for whatever reason, for our experience in terms of initiation, in terms of responsibility, and so on. All these things can give us seniority. It is sometimes difficult to figure out how to determine who is the most senior. There is seniority according to ashram. There is seniority according to responsibility in service. There is seniority according to years, right? And so on. Right? So whatever may be there, the first principle is that no one on his own accord is to consider himself as superior. And as long as anyone is considering himself as superior, there's a problem. Still, some are acting as teachers, some are acting as students, and that's simply, these are roles that we play according to time, place, and circumstance. Sometimes we are the student, sometimes we are the teacher. And with time, the Vaishnavas may put us in the role of a teacher, but we always realize that there's still a lot to learn. Right? So, the same point again in a different way. Another point then is that every Vaishnava is worthy of special respect. And respect must be a matter from the heart. It must be genuine respect. Respect which is external is one thing. Right? We can learn all the intricacies of how one is supposed to behave as a Vaishnava. But that is actually on the level of the mode of goodness. Right? On the level of pure transcendence, on the spiritual platform, the respect is genuine. On the level of the mode of goodness, it is our duty to be respectful. That's the mode of goodness. When one is in the mode of goodness, yes, one must respect his elders. Yes, one must respect his teachers. Yes, one must respect the sadhus. One must be respectful. That is the mode of goodness. That is our duty. Yeah? But Vaishnava relationships, a certain amount of duty may be there, because after all, we begin our spiritual life on the principle of Vaidhi Bhakti. Vaidhi means rules and regulations. So then rules and regulations also govern our Vaishnava relationships. But the Sankirtan movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is not... You've really turned off all the fans, huh? I'm sweating like anything. And they also. So the Vaishnavas. They are not meant to live a life of Vaidhi Bhakti. That's not Lord Chaitanya's movement. Lord Chaitanya's movement is a movement where practically immediately spontaneity is part of the process. In previous ages, we see how the Vaishnavas were very concerned with just doing everything properly in terms of puja, in terms of worship of the Lord, and a lot of awe and reverence. And in South India, we may find that, especially in the worship of Lakshmi Narayan, right? We find such rigid rules and regulations and standards. But the Gaudiya Vaishnavas are slightly different. The Gaudiya Vaishnavas are traditionally very spontaneous, and a lot depends on spontaneity, because the nature of Sankirtan is such that it is in one particular lecture or statement Srila Prabhupada said, it's not about clanging the kartals together. Rather, kirtan is all about bhav, he's explaining. It's about bhav, about the mood, about the consciousness, about the offering that is involved there. So in that way, in kirtan, we give ourselves and we also get back more of that same transcendental taste and so on. And it all creates some level of, it affects our consciousness. So in the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, our relationships are based on this principle, on spontaneous glorification of Krishna, and on sharing that glorification of Krishna. Like, I'll give you an example to kind of illustrate my point more. One time, this was in South Africa, they have a South Indian temple there, which is worshipping Venkateshji, and it's very much a copy of the original. And the deity also, a little smaller, but otherwise everything is the same, and the pujaris come from India, and it's the whole traditional thing. I'm sure you also know this kind of rigid style of worship. So they have also every year a chariot festival, and they had the deity on the chariot, nice chariot, beautiful. And they were taking the deity out on the chariot, but there was no kirtan. There was no kirtan. So the whole festival was pulling the chariot. And they were all like, pulling the chariot. So every 10, 15 minutes, they had to sit down. They had to sit down, for pulling this chariot, so much pulling. And then again, they would pull and sit down. And they had invited us for the kirtan. So we're doing this kirtan in front of them, and we're running up and down and dancing, and even in front of them, you know, all kinds of things. We tried to make them dance, and took about 1 hour until the first one started to kind of slowly. And if I was comparing that to our Ratiyatras, right, pulling the chariot, I have no idea how the chariot is being pulled, but somehow or other it's being pulled, right? No one talks about, and we pulled the chariot. Of course, everyone wants to pull the chariot. You know, if you pull the chariot a bit, you go back to Godhead. So we want to, and everyone makes sure that he gets his hand on the rope, right, somewhere. But it's never been our main focus, you know? We're going to pull the chariot, and we don't talk for weeks about how we pulled the chariot. We're talking about the kirtan, right? It was amazing kirtan, and the whole Ratiyatra, it was just something else, you know. I mean, let's say so maybe Lokanath Maharaj was there or something, you know, like, took it to another dimension, right? Because he has such a sweet voice, but not only such a sweet voice, but so much bhakti. Right? So much devotion when Maharaj is singing, then it gets all transcendent. Just to name an example. So, in this way, we can see the difference between performing such an activity according to a regulative principle, or performing the same activity in a more spontaneous mood. So therefore, the underlying mood of our movement is spontaneous devotional service. Although we cannot immediately come to that level of pure spontaneous devotional service, still the underlying mood of our of our Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya is immediately spontaneity, and the essence is on that, right? The essence is on, like, immediately on taste, right? Very much on taste, not so much on doing everything properly, right? Of course we must do things properly, that is another matter, but it is not the main thing. The main thing is the taste, right? In the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. So therefore, also in the Vaishnava relationships, we can look at it from two angles. We can look at it from the angle of dealings according to prescribed duty and how to act, how not to act. That's one way of looking at it. And I'm sure that you are aware of these things. You have heard all that. I can, of course, give a detailed listing of how a junior is supposed to act towards a senior and so on, but then again these things are already implemented in your temple program, in your temple Vaishnava etiquette. So therefore I don't feel so inspired to give like a very detailed listing. I feel more inspired to kind of add another dimension to it, yeah? The dimension of where it transforms into relationships based on bhakti, yeah? Relationships from the heart based on serving Krishna. Yeah? That is the principle. Yeah? And that should be in the forefront. Yeah? It should be in the forefront of really serving Krishna, serving Prabhupada. Yeah. Everyone should have a strong relationship with Srila Prabhupada. Right? If we all really feel that we are Prabhupada's man, yeah? If our first consideration is this is Prabhupada's movement, that's the understanding. If we understand how Srila Prabhupada is unique, how special he is, how he's not just one great spiritual master in our line, but how Prabhupada is really the guru for this era, right? We can just sometimes think about what he did, right? Basically, Prabhupada took Krishna consciousness from east to west, right? And adjusted it and to the Western world, and he made certain adjustments which made Krishna consciousness applicable for the modern world. And then he brought it back to India, right, in that form, yeah, so that also the modern Indian could again connect. Just like sometimes in the past I used to do quite some college preaching here in India, and one of the things that I was encountering in those days was that many of the students, they were kind of lost, right? They came from some village, and they came from a very pious traditional background, but then they had come to the university, the college. I was in IIT, such a competitive spirit, yeah? IIT, you know, like Indian Institute for Technology, so much prestige and so much push, and they kind of said, "What? They were in between two worlds, huh? In the modern world of the university, which is trying to squeeze them into a mold of a modern scientific man, yeah? And their village identity from the past, and 2 feet in two boats, right? And sort of like, well, what to do, you know? I mean, what can we do? We have to go forward, right? We have to go forward, so therefore we have to go for the new identity. We have no choice. We have no choice. What can we do? The sentiment was there, in the childhood for everything, but then we have to leave it now. And we encountered this in India, and no one had an answer to it except Prabhupada. When we come with this very practical Yukta Vairagya philosophy, okay, yeah, you can have, you know, you can have your Pentium and everything. I can have my Pentium, yes, you can. Really? Yeah, yeah, oh yeah. With lots of gigahertz and everything. With gigahertz and everything, I can. And still be a devotee. Yes, yes, no problem. You know, yeah, you can use your driver's license also. I can use all that. Yes, you can. You can. You can be a computer programmer and be Krishna conscious at the same time. So like that, we see how Prabhupada brought back this Krishna consciousness in a form that it related to modern man. So even for India, Anyway, Prabhupada is famous for Paschita Deshatari, for delivering the Western countries, for bringing Krishna consciousness to an international level, for bringing Krishna consciousness to the modern world in the form that the modern world can practice it. Certain things simplified. Chips and tomato chutney on Ekadasi, chalega. Before in Vaishnava Sampradaya, nay chalega, that would not have been acceptable, out of the question. Mahaparad, this eating on Ekadasi, that is in Hari Bhakti Vilas. There is a verse where it states that anyone who eats on Ekadasi, next life, a hog. So, did anyone eat on Ekadasi? So what about Hari Bhakti Vilas? But Srila Prabhupada took it further than Hari Bhakti Vilas. Took the mercy of Lord Chaitanya a step further. Hari Bhakti Vilas had many elements, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, of Karma Kanda. Because it was preaching according to time, place and circumstance. And then it maintains also transcendental principles. So, we must first of all understand Srila Prabhupada. Right? If we want genuine Vaishnava relationships, they must be based on fulfilling Prabhupada's desire. Our relationships must be based on being Prabhupada men. Then we are talking about good Vaishnava relationships. That's the essence, that we give our life in sacrifice for Srila Prabhupada, for his mission. And if we do that and identify with it, then we can together take on this work, and then automatically everything, the priority of things will fall into place. Because if we don't do that, if we don't put so much emphasis on Srila Prabhupada, then our whole behavior will be different. Then we may wonder, well, how should a Vaishnava behave? And then we may look at some ancient scripture. Someone might think, let me go to such and such Baba and find out how it used to be in the Gurukul. 600 years ago, they have a Gurukul that has a tradition of 700 years. Let us go and check it out. It's okay. Why not? We can. But as long as we understand the priority. The priority is that our Vaishnav relationships are centered around changing the world. We have to change the world. The job is not done. It's not done at all. Bombay is a huge city, and it's not that, you know, the city symbol is a Vaishnav symbol. It should be, you know, the city should have a logo, you know, with some Vaishnav symbols and some Vaishnav slogans. Right? That's how it should be. The mayor should have tilak, right? And follow four regulative principles. And all the Vaishnav holidays should be observed as city holidays in Bombay. It should be the predominant thing. But we don't see that. Bombay is known as party city. It is known as a city where all the degradation of the Western world is existing, and it's like becoming the you see that sometimes. Sometimes I glance at a paper, sometimes I glance at a magazine. I don't read them from cover to cover with great interest, but to understand more about Maya, we sometimes look, how is Maya manifesting in this place? And then we see the Bombay jet set, right, has developed. So this is at the core of our Vaishnav relationship. If at the core of our Vaishnav relationship there is not the mood to try and change this situation and to establish Krishna consciousness as the predominant program, then our relationships will also be artificial. But in the spirit of distributing the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the pure form as Srila Prabhupada taught it. Prabhupada has given us the standard of what the pure standard is for this age, for this particular, for these circumstances, for these kind of people. Then we teach that. So then, in cooperating together, in preaching Krishna consciousness, we can develop genuine respect for each other, for the sacrifice we make. And of course, everything we do must, first, we cannot preach to the world and exclude ourselves. Some people, they want to preach to the whole world, but they forget to preach to themselves. That does not work. So first of all, in Vaishnav relationships, we must take shelter ourselves. And if we do that, then we can become spiritually strong. So I am proposing to put the emphasis on preaching, followed by a very strong program of hearing and chanting, and where every devotee becomes learned in scriptures, so that we are always remembering Bhagavatam. Because how can we behave properly if we are not remembering Bhagavatam? If we are not remembering Krishna, it is not possible. So we must constantly, again and again, submerge ourselves in sound, in transcendental sound vibration. Then we can rise above the mode of passion and ignorance. Tada rajas tamo bhavo kama lobhayaschaye mate ivedi tanvidi stittam satra prasidati. Then we'll rise above the lower modes of material nature and become situated in the mode of goodness and rise up to transcendental goodness. Then we can do it. Then in transcendental goodness we can truly associate with the Vaishnavas and relish and appreciate very much the Vaishnavas. Well, so that's my first angle on the topic. We can start on another angle after that, but I think we should first discuss this now. So I want some responses from your side for a while, and then maybe we'll take it somewhere else. So anyone? It's okay if there's not a real question. I think
hearing and chanting is very important for brahmacharis.
Hearing and chanting is very important.
And when you are associating with devotees, other brahmacharis, many times we have this problem that because we have very little time for our personal sadhana or reading, personal study, so we try to ignore the other brahmacharis, and it's like our can finish off fast so that I can go back to my own thing, own study, own self. Our association is
also actually not meaningful. And that motivation is there. The other thing is sometimes we do associate, but then actually there's motivation.
That okay, I can get this done
for him. Okay, you remember that. Put that on the show. One at a time. That's easier. You keep it in your mind, and I don't have to create a compartment where I have to remember question number two while I'm answering number one. No time to associate is the point. The point is that we are so busy in our service and with our sadhana and our own reading and practice that where's the time to associate? Well, there is a time for everything. It's true that in the material world it will never be ideal. And just as in the morning class we came on the point of how one has to keep a balance, right? There's many, many factors that we have to balance. Someone liked stories, so I'll tell a story since people like stories. But one time we were on a Sunday feast in Germany, and somehow or other there was a Russian clown from a circus, and the Russian circus is good, it's very famous, Russian state circus, right? So he was there and he wanted to do an act for the people, right? And 10 minutes, he said, all right, let him do. And he had something with balls, and he had many balls that he was spinning around on his fingers. So he had like balls on his fingers. He's sitting on a little stool, then he had balls on his toes, so a balls on one foot, ball on the other foot, ball on the finger, and finally a little stick on his nose with a ball on the nose, also like that, you know, and then moving them around and sometimes throwing them up and catching them, all five, at the same time, all kinds of things like this. So that was really an art of balancing. Okay? He was balancing all these five balls at the same time, very difficult. Maybe if we would have even gotten it together, right, to spin one, the balls, right, even two, right, we would throw one up, the other one would fall, because he would be too busy catching this one. Oh, that one fall. So it is very difficult to keep a balance. But the art of keeping balance, there is no such thing as ever finding the balance. It's not like that. No. Balance is like in motion. It's like riding, when you're riding a bicycle, you have to adjust all the time. Yeah, constant. Yeah, you know, you sit, you keep balance, but then you adjust a little bit, adjust this way, that way, steering a little. It's not that your hands, when you're steering the bicycle, it's not that your hands are fixed and never move. You know? You may not notice it, but your hands are moving a little this way, that way, you know. Yeah? So, keeping a balance, the art of keeping the balance is to keep the balance in motion. That means to make constant adjustments. So we are seeing, now I am spending so much time at my reading, I don't even have time to talk to devotees anymore. Maybe I should talk a little bit more to devotees. Or, like yesterday, you know, I came in the night and then Swayam Bhagavan gave me the whole schedule, and it gave a whole schedule immediately after arrival. But I had just been 1 month through South Africa, and in Rati Yatras, and every day, some days three programs, every day at least two, and all late nights and everything. And I was like, forget it. It's like, I don't want to see anybody. I'll stay inside the room. I won't even come out. Right? Lock the door. And even when Swayam Bhagavan came in, I didn't talk to him. Huh? I said, here, read this book. Yeah? Isn't that true? He wanted to talk to me about college preaching. He said, Swayam Bhagavan, we're reading now. Here, take this book. Yeah? And because we have to keep a balance. Yeah? And so sometimes we have to just put the emphasis in one direction and other time in another direction. And again, that takes intelligence. This process is not, it's for people who can think. And if we were not used to think, some of us, before we came, we never used to think. But now that we have come to Krishna consciousness, we have to start thinking, have to wake up and use that substance up there, whatever it is, Govar Ganesh. What shall we say? We have to use that Govar. So, just think of this balance in motion. So it's up to us to keep all the different aspects, some attention. It's like cooking, you know, 6-7 pots at the same time, you know. So if a stove, some you put on a low flame, a little to the back, and the ones in the front you're giving some work on. Okay, now put that one in the back, this one in the front, cook that one for a while, put in the back, this one. Yeah? If you cook many preps, you have to do it like that. Yeah. Because in the material world, there is one fundamental problem, and that is, we'll never have enough time. And that's something we're not going to fix, right? No matter what we do, we're not going to fix that problem. So you've identified the problem, but it is a problem that cannot be fixed, because it's a problem from the material world. There is not enough time, and there never will be. For nothing. Not enough time. Have you noticed it? Not enough time to chant. Not enough time to take prasadam. Not enough time to sleep. Not enough time to associate. Not enough time to preach. Not enough time to study. Not enough time. Can you imagine what the spiritual world will be like? Only sometimes in the spiritual world there will be not enough time just to create the mood. Yeah? But otherwise, there's always, one can fulfill every desire, every endeavor completely. In the material world, very rarely. So, balance it as best as you can. all the balls. Keep this one spinning,
that one spinning.
The toes. Any other question? Vaishnavas come from different backgrounds, are very difficult to adjust. What to do? What to do? Yes, I have seen that phenomena because I used to be temple president in Vrindavan, which is an international center, and you could really see it there, you know, it was like, we had the Bengalis and the Oriyas next to each other, then the Biharis, and you know, then the UP Walas. It was all like kind of, you know, South Indians on the other side. Everyone seemed to have its own little cliques and little groups, and then the Italians were with each other, and you name it, you know. So I guess to some extent Prabhupada did not mind that. To some extent he didn't mind it. There was sometimes some criticism of groups that would segregate, that wanted their own kind of identity. But Prabhupada didn't mind. In America there was a temple of black devotees, or there were black devotees and they want to have their own temple. Prabhupada said, that's okay, sure, you can have. Or also in South Africa, which is the land of apartheid, where different communities are separated, Prabhupada said, everyone in the world thought that the government of that country was the world government. And Prabhupada said, this government is very good. You know, very good. Yeah, because they didn't allow certain illicit activities, and Prabhupada appreciated that. And he didn't mind the segregation. So in one sense, when people of a similar karmic background are drawn together, that's natural. But on the other hand, Prabhupada also pointed out that real brotherhood exists on the spiritual platform. Yeah? And that is an important point. And that we also see. And again, if I may take you to an example of South Africa, we see that, you know, like how for so many years different communities of races have been separated, and they're trying to now bring them together. So we went to this university program, and this was in 1995, 1 year after the public declaration of unity. Yeah? So there was this huge student festival, there were 5,000 students, and that they had invited us because we did Food for Life, and they asked us to feed all the students, which we agreed to do, and in exchange they would give us the right to open the festival with a kirtan and to also give a 5-minute talk. Right? So we did. We opened the festival, and it was well appreciated. Everyone liked the kirtan. And then there was something from the university where the deans came on stage, and they came with a coffin, and it made like a very kind of strange thing, and it was a political statement about the death of the subsidy. Yeah? Then there was an Indian lady doing the announcements, And then suddenly a band of Zulus came from the back, you know, all in traditional attire with spears and so on, and animal skins. And then they came on the stage, and the Zulu chief embraced the Indian lady in such a way that we thought maybe we should save her. Then he turned around, and it turned out that he was a professor in the university. Right? So it was a very... And then they had some little Indian kids do a dance and a little song, and then there were some white people, they were doing some things, reciting poetry. And then there was some black African, and he was doing a dance, a tap dance with his shoes, clicking with his fingers at the same time, clicking with his tongue as well, and singing a song, and all in different rhythms. So it was quite amazing. And like this, they were all doing their things. And the whole idea was bring different cultures together, and because we are the Rainbow Nation, you know? And we are all brothers, and we are learning from the mistakes of the past, right? And now we are all going to coexist and be together. Forget it. Yeah? Forget it. You can have a million programs, but it won't work. You can read big speeches, yeah, but it won't work. Because there are differences. You can declare we're all equal, but we're not all equal at all. Huh? We can see that we're different. Yeah? I know the difference. In India, I've lived a long time in India, I know the difference very well between a Bihari and a Bengali and an Oriya, or, you know, South Indian. I know. And you know it too. Yeah? Yeah, you know. Yeah? So accordingly, we feel the differences. We know the differences. I know there's a difference between Juhu and Chopati. I know. Yeah? I know. So what to do? No? How do we deal with that? Yeah? We can only have unity by accepting the differences. See, the Karmis, when they try to declare unity, they try to make a declaration that we are all equal, and therefore that we should appreciate each other. You know? I mean, the Karmis, they try to impose this thing of, he's as good as I am. You know? Look at someone else and think he's as good as I am. But that's not the Vaishnava mood. The Vaishnava mood is that we simply look at, like, someone else, his service to Krishna. And if we see how nicely this person is serving Krishna, huh? He may be totally different from me, but just see how amazing he's serving Krishna, then we can appreciate. Then we can really appreciate and leave someone in his value. See, otherwise you get something like, you know, Indian Vaishnav, Western Vaishnav, Russian Vaishnav, Chinese Vaishnav, African Vaishnav, you know, like North Indian Vaishnav, South Indian Vaishnav, Chopati Vaishnav, Juhu Vaishnav. Right? You get all these kind of things where you start to think, well, but you know, the people, the devotees in that other temple, they're nice, but they're not following the same standard as in our temple. Right? And therefore, you know, what to do? We are better, because we have better standard, kind of thing. And everyone may think like that, you know. But if we actually see the service that everyone is doing, although they are different, although they may follow different standards, but look at the service they're doing. Yeah. And if we see how much service they're doing, then we can appreciate all the Vaishnavas, right? Although they're different, and then we can have unity in diversity, which is the only solution for the Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya, because never ever before has there been a movement where such a variety of people has been brought together. Right? You know, like, we don't understand, huh? I remember that when the first Russian devotee started to come, that one American devotee who also had ancestors from Russia said, my grandfather came from Russia, maybe he was a Bolshevik. You know, the American didn't even know what Bolshevik meant, you know, but anyway, it sounded romantic, you know. And then the Russian, without laughing or smiling, just said, maybe that was the problem. Right? He tried to make some funny remark, but it wasn't appreciated, you know. Different cultures, how can we understand these different cultures? Yeah? We can only transcend them, we'll never really understand them. Yeah? I've lived in India for half of my life, right? Still, I'll never understand. I'll never understand completely the Indian mentality, because I'm from the West. Some difference is there. It's a fact. So, doesn't matter. Yeah. We are what we are, and we try to engage that in the service of Krishna. Huh? Because we also find that, you know, we're not going to become that much different. In one sense, we are what we are, and we engage ourselves and we purify our nature. And we give up the lower aspects of our nature. But then we still remain, to some extent, we keep something from what we learned from our mother, from our karma. Yeah? If someone was born in Italy, you know, he still has some tendency to speak, you know, with the hands and very dramatic person, you know, from Italy, yeah? You know, it's like just the nature of the Italian people is to be dramatic, Bravo, it was a fantastic kirtan, it was wonderful, I really love it so much, you know, I mean, what to do, it's like, he'll become a Vaishnava, but he will still have that flavor, you know, that will never change, that's not meant to change. So we are an amazing movement that all these different people with all these very different cultures, very different backgrounds, actually can develop real loving relationships by appreciating each other's service to Krishna. That's amazing. And we can just appreciate all the unity and diversity. The real United Nations, as Prabhupada so often quoted very proudly, even here in Bombay on the Maidan, Prabhupada ended the program with those lines. The original Maidan program, Prabhupada's final words, there was a marriage and they were from different countries, and Prabhupada ended it with the real United Nations. Big applause and big headlines, you know. Climax, you know, like for the wonderful program. The last message was really a glorious message. Unity and diversity, that's what it means. The unity is our Krishna consciousness. Then the diversity doesn't matter. Now it's 7 minutes left. I have to speak loud because the saw is also very loud. Personal preferences that devotees may have and they try to impose them upon others, is that what you're saying? Or I heard the personal preferences or the personal bias parts, but then I can understand exactly what you want with that.
The personal bias
Some people don't want to have relationship with some people.
Oh, well, you know, I think we have to see that some segregation, as I said, Srila Prabhupada was not against, right? And that people who are, this movement is going to attract all kinds of people, and some people will be inclined towards studying books, some will be inclined towards practical work, some, you know, some will be inclined towards cooking, some will be inclined towards pujaris, some will be into playing madanga, you know. And you see, like, you know, the madanga guys, they have special madangas, so like real tuning, even high quality, and they're really good. And they talk and they share some beats with each other, you know. It's like one looks like, how did you do that? You know, okay. Yeah? So it's natural. It's very natural that certain kind of people are attracted to each other, either by the activities, there is some separation, or also by mentality. Some people are very strong, some people are, excuse me, Prabhu, can I ask a question? Yeah? Some are very quiet. Yeah? So it's natural that people are attracted to each other for their natures. And I don't think we can just rule that out, you know. I think it is, we'll have that. But then there is also some segregation that comes about from our conditioning. Yeah? Where because of our conditioning, we are used to certain kind of people from our village, or from, you know, certain kind of people we trust and some people we don't trust. So we have to also learn to trust. So if in the community of Vaishnavas there is a high standard of trustworthy behavior, where everyone is not only honest but respectful to each other and appreciative. See, if there is an appreciative, respectful atmosphere, I say both, appreciative, respectful, then it's easier to open up in relationships. There are two forces which, well, no, maybe I won't say that. Anyway, in this world, we are being controlled to some extent by fear. So in relationships there is actual fear. Some people have natural fear for other people. They don't trust them. They just don't trust them. I will not reveal my mind to this person. He will misuse it. He will joke, he will minimize me or whatever. And they may have some natural reservation, even on the level of just looking at a person, you know, something in his mood doesn't make me feel relaxed about opening up. Yeah? So these things are there, psychological conditioning. That we can overcome if there's the right atmosphere. And that can be improved when there is trust and appreciation, respect in the Vaishnav community. And that we can work on as a community, to have that open, respectful, appreciative mood. And especially the seniors, they must display a heart. Of course, I said that already several times, but if the seniors are the one, they set the mood. The seniors, they set the mood. So So if they display the heart, right, in the dealings, then the whole mood becomes one of trust and openness. Right? Otherwise, we can have the highest standards in terms of rules and regulations. Right? We can be very strict about what is allowed, what is not allowed, how you're supposed to do this, and govern every detail, everything just proper, 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 and that's very good. But if the heart is not there, then the relationship will remain cold, impersonal, then formality will become the governing principle in relationships, and then we defeat our purpose. So then we implement high standards, and yet we're defeating our purpose, right? By really developing loving Vaishnava relationships. So appreciation and trust must be there, and next to the high standards, there must be a lot of understanding for our own human conditioning, our own human natures, by which we don't necessarily fit in all these standards. It's very nice. Here are 1,008 standards of what you're supposed to be. Oh my God, I have 567 points which don't fit in my nature. What am I going to do? Hide them. Act as if I don't have them. Yeah? And then we live in the mold of the 1,008 standards, but there is a whole inner hidden life of 567 aspects of my personality that don't fit, and I hide them. Right? That's not good, really. Yeah, but if I talk about these things, you know, people have no tolerance, zero tolerance for anything that doesn't fit in these standards. Zero, right? If you have one quality that doesn't fit, then you are a rascal, okay? You are fallen. You should be repentant, correct yourself immediately, and overcome this weakness in yourself. Yes, Prabhu, I'm so sorry, Krishna, it's my mistake. I won't do it again. I for a moment thought the wrong thing, but I will not have such thoughts anymore. Right? You see my point? So, we can kill the human spirit with too much formality, and we must be careful about that. Yeah? There can be high standards, and there must be high standards, but also an atmosphere where we say, we understand. After all, we are from Kali Yuga, we understand that sometimes it is difficult. So if the elder devotees have this kind of warm mood, then there will be a mood to open up, which can filter down to all the devotees. That will help. Used up my time. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.